We're holding on Tzadik Ches Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, "Hasholos Apara, a person borrows a cow, v'shocholoi v'yad b'noi, and the mashil, the owner of the cow, sent it to him with his son, meaning the mashil's son. So instead of bringing it over himself, he sent it with his son, v'yad avdoi, or with his servant." And we'll see in the Gemara when we talk about over here about Avodim in our Mishnah, what kind of Eved we're talking about. The Yad Shluchoi, or through his Shliach, Oy Biad Bnoi, Biad Avdei, Biad Shluchoi Shal Shoyel, or it could equally well be with the son, or the Eved, or the Shliach of the Shoyel. In all those cases, if the animal dies on the way, potter, then the shoyel is potter because it's not yet in his reshus. Now Rashi mentions that we learned in Baba Kama there's machlokas between Rabba and Rav Chista, when we talk about the shliach, what kind of shliach of a shoyel are we talking about? So Rav Chista says, if there were edim that he was a shliach, then in fact the shoyel would be chayav as soon as it was given to him, because shluch hashon kamos, and we have edim that he was made as shliach. But rather, we're talking about over here that this is schiroi lekitoi. This is not a shliach that he appointed with edim. Rather, this is a hired worker or a seasonal worker that the shoyel always has around his house, and therefore it was sent with him. So everybody knows that this person is his socher or his locket, but nevertheless there's no actual edim to that effect. So therefore he can say that, therefore the shoyel can say, I didn't yet accept achrayus for it. That was a point of Chista. Rabba meanwhile says, even if he made him a shliach with edim, it doesn't mean that he's chayiv with oinsin. It just meant, in other words, this is a trustworthy person. If you want to send it with him, then go ahead and do that. So that's the machlokas. In other words, here, when he appointed the shliach with edim, then are we going to say that, when he appointed the shliach with edim, are we going to say that he is in fact chayev, or are we going to say that even then he's potter? On the other hand, continues the Mishnah, Omalaya Shoyal, on the other hand, if the Shoyal tells him, Shlachli Viad, on the other hand, so he sent it to Mesa Potter, Omalaya Shoyal, Shochelli Viad Bni, on the other hand, if the Shoyal says, send me the animal, Viad Bni, with my son, Viad Avdi, or with my servant, Viad Shluchi, or with my Shliach, or Viad Bincha, Viad Abducha, Viad Shluchacha, or with your son, your Eved, or your Shliach. So that's different, because he said to send it with him. So that can mean that he accepted Achrayus on himself for that. Osha Omalei HaMashil, or if Mashil, the owner of the animal, says, Harini Mashachel, Lacha, Viad Ni, Viad Abdi, Viad Shluchi, or Viad Bincha, Viad Abducha, Viad Shluchacha, the Omalei HaShoyel Shlach. And in all those cases whether the shoyel himself says send it with somebody, with any of these six people, or whether the mashal says I'd like to send it with one of them, and the other one says yes, go ahead and do that. In all those cases, v'shulcha, and he did send it, or mesa, and it died on the way, chayev, then he's chayev because he already accepted achrayus for it. So actually there are a couple of explanations what exactly is the nature, why is he chayav? Is it in fact that at that point he is considered a shoyel? Or is it considered already as though he took it into his rishus? Or is it even, there's an idea that he's an orev, that he said, take it out of your rishus, meaning in other words, that I'm now accepting responsibility for it. Well, somebody has to be responsible for it at all times. So by saying send it with your son or my son or what have you, then in effect he's saying that I understand that therefore you're going to be giving up responsibility to watch it, so therefore I'm accepting responsibility on it myself. There's different ways of looking at it. Is it that maybe you could say also he made him a shliach to appoint him a shliach for him? So he's saying to the marshal, you are going to be my shliach to appoint a shliach. So again, then so it can be that, it can be a matter of orev, Anyway, so in those cases, then the Mishnah is describing that he's chayav. V'chein b'shor shemachzira, and the same thing also happens when he's returning it, the other way around. Now, if the shoyel returns it unilaterally with his son or his eved or whatever, or the other guy's son or eved, it's still considered in his reshus until it reaches the other guy's possession. And therefore, if it dies on the way, he's going to be chayav. On the other hand, if the mashal says, send it to me, or the shoyel says, should I send it with Pliny? And the mashal says yes, then it means that he'd be potter because then at that point, it means that the mashal was willing to accept the reshus on it again. So the Gemara starts talking, there can be cases where even just saying it is not enough, and sometimes there can be a certain case also talked about in Baba Kama over there where you actually need a hashah, where you need an actual document saying that you're entitled to get it. One thing is also, we did learn earlier in the Masechta that we're saying that he's still chayav v'chein b'shal shemachzira was only when it was during the time of the schirus. If he's returning it after the time of the schirus, then we're saying he's not a shoyel anymore. Not the schirus, the she'eva. If he returns it after the time of the she'eva, then anyway he's not considered a shoyel on it anymore because he's not allowed to use it after the time. If they had made up, for example, that he's borrowing it for 30 days. After 30 days, he's not allowed to use it anymore. At that point, he becomes a Shema Socher, and a Shema Socher is potter if the animal dies on the way because of oinus. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. What do you mean, v'yad avdoi chay? What do you mean that if he sends it with his eved, he should be chay? Why? Yad eved, he should be chay if we said, if it dies on the way because it's considered already to, it's considered to be already in the Shoyel Rushus. Yad eved ki yad rabbi. Isn't the hand, we're assuming we're talking about over here an Eved Kanani. Usually in the Gemara when we say Eved without specifying, that's usually what we mean, an Eved Kanani. So in that case, so if the Shoyel says to the Mashal, send it with your Eved, then, why should the Shoyel already be chayav? It's still together, it's still with the Eved of the Mashal, and therefore it should be considered in the possession of the Mashal. So therefore, so the Mashal still has responsibility for it until it reaches the Shoyel. So the answer is, Shmuel says, this would be one of those cases where it actually means, where the word Eved means an Eved Ivri. Now the difference is, an Eved Kanani, the master actually owns his body. We talk about it in Gittin. The Gemara mentions over there that a Goyisha owner does not. A Goyisha owner of a slave owns only his Maisi Yadav, but an owner of an Eved Kanani does in fact own the goof of the Eved, which has various implications. So one of them is over here. So for now, yes, if it's an Eved Kanani, we would say Yad Eved Ki Yad Rabbi. But because we're talking about an Eved Ivri, where the master only owns his Malacha, and that's it. Then therefore, it's considered in somebody else's rishus. Rav Amar Filo Tema BeEved Kanani. Rav says you don't need to say that. You could even say we are talking about an Eved Kanani. Nase Ka'oy Malay, because it's when he says send it with the Eved, is the equivalent of telling him Akisha B'Mako V'Hitovay, hit it with a stick, and it will come. It will follow me. So in other words, then so whether he's actually sending it with somebody or not, the shoyel is in effect saying, I'm willing to accept responsibility of it from when it goes out of your reshus. The same way as if he were to tell them, just hit it with a stick, and from there on, I'll watch it and make sure it comes to me. Then at that point, he's accepted achrayos. So Shmuel is saying the same thing when he tells him, send it with you. Eved Kanani is the same idea. That he's already accepted responsibility, and therefore he can be chayav for it. Tosfos points out actually, so a couple of things in this. First of all, Tosfos points out are Rav and Shmuel necessarily arguing? Tosfos brings from Rabbi Nachmanel that yes, there is in fact a machloekas over here. Shmuel is saying the only way to make our Mishnah work would be with an Eved Ivri. It would not work with an Eved Kanani as opposed to Rav. And then Tosfos says that the halacha would end up being like Shmuel. There are Rishonim who actually learn that Rav and Shmuel are not necessarily arguing, just they're giving different scenarios over here. Anyway, but Tosfos points out, now if the Eved is bringing it, Isn't that She'elah B'Bailim? Isn't that what we've learned in the Furtas so far in our Perek about that when the owner himself is hired out or lent out to work with the animal, then you're potter. So then in that case, what are we talking about? The Shoyal being chayav for the animal dying anyway. The anyway, if we say yad eved ki yad rabbi, then we're saying that the Eved, forget about Yad Eved, Piyad Rabbi, actually, what we're saying is, in other words, that it would be considered that the owner himself has gone along with it. So Tosfos says no. When the owner himself had agreed that he's going to come work with the animal, and then instead he sends his Eved, then that would be, we'd call that She'elah B'Bailim, and we said previously in our Perek that for that purpose, Yad Eved, Piyad Rabbi, and the fact that he's sending his Eved to sub for him, it's still considered She'elah B'Bailim. But here, what it is, here, if that the Shoyal is saying, I want to borrow your cow, and I want you also to send it with your Eved, in effect, in other words, I want to borrow both of them. Well, the Eved belongs to him also, just like a cow. So that's the equivalent of saying, I want to borrow two cows, rather than to say, I want to borrow the cow together with you, the B'Bailim. The Rambam actually learns differently and says that if in fact he were to say that he's borrowing the Eved Kanani with it, it would be considered She'elah B'Bailim. So that would explain why. So again, Tosfos points out the halacha may not be like Rab. The halacha may be like Shmuel, that this concept of sending it beyond Abed, he's going to be chayev, would only work by an Eved Ivri. There's no way to make it work by an Eved Kanani, precisely because if it was an Eved Kanani, then it would be She'elah B'Bailim, and he'd be potter anyway. So the Gemara says, Mesri, I have a contradiction on Rachel. We learn in a braisa, hashoyel osapora, a person borrows a cow, v'shochol v'yad b'noi, and he sends it to him with his son, v'yad shlochoy, with his shliach, chayev, v'yad avdoi potter. Now, in the Mishnah, we had said that he sent it to him with his son, or his shliach, or his eved, then he's chayev. And here the braisa is distinguishing and saying that with an eved he's potter. So b'shleim of the Shmuel. Now according to Shmuel, then it's easy to understand what's the difference between the Mishnah and the Braisa. Must listen. The Eved Ivri Braisa, the Eved Kanani. So the Mishnah is talking about an Eved Ivri, and they said that an Eved Ivri, the master doesn't own his guf, only his malacha. So it's considered a separate person, and therefore the Eved in that sense is like a shliach. Whereas the Braisa is talking about an Eved Kanani. And Yad Eved to Yad Rabbi, and therefore it's still considered in the Mashal's Rishus, and that would be why the Braisa says Saint Potter. Ella the Rav Kasha, but we're going to Rav, where Rav says that even in the Mishnah, we can be talking about an Eved Kanani. Well then, why in the Braisa are we saying that with an Eved, he'd be Potter? What kind of Eved are we talking about where Rav would say in the Mishnah he'd be Chai, in the Mishnah would be saying he's Chayev, and the Braisa would be saying that he's Potter for anything that happens on the way? The answer is Omalach Rav. The answer is Rav can answer to you. Loy tema nasef ka'omar le. When we said before that Rav had explained we said when he sends it with the Eved Kanani, it's the equivalent of telling him Akisha b'mako, hit it with a stick and then it'll come. So now we're going to say that Rav is saying no. It's not that we consider it as if he said that. Ela Ema, rather you can say our Mishnah is talking about Omar Hakisha B'Mako V'Tovei, that our Mishnah is talking about where he actually said, hit it with a stick and it will come. So then he was Meshabed himself as soon as it leaves the other guy's sponsor. Just because the Mashal sent the Eved with it, that doesn't change things. That doesn't cause him to be potter. Again, if we say that the Eved is considered like the Balabas as far as She'elah B'Bailim, that's another matter. But again, we're according to Tosfos at least that wouldn't follow. We wouldn't say that because it's not like he had said to begin with, I want to borrow your services, and instead he sent the Eved with him. So that's what we're talking about. He says Hakisha B'Mako V'Itavoy. So therefore, he actually says. So he actually says, send it with your, Eved, and when I want, it's not, he doesn't say send it with your Eved. According to Rashi, it comes out that he's saying, you hit it with a stick, it'll come. And then the Mashal thinks to himself, why should I only do that? How do I know it's going to get there safely? Let me send it with my Eved. Nevertheless, though, since the Shoyal had actually said, Akisha B'Mako V'Tovoy, not like we assumed originally, that we're just assuming as if he said that, well, therefore, then that's reason enough to make him Chayev, according to Rav. So here's where Tosfos points out that there is a bit of a doichet to explain the Mishnah that way, and that would be a reason to say the halacha is like Shmuel, and to say that Rav and Shmuel necessarily are arguing, and that in fact the halacha would be like Shmuel. So the Gemara says de'itmar, as in fact we find that Rav says such a thing in a different context, because we have a discussion on the question hashileni paroscha. What if so? Reuben says to Shimon, "Lend me your cow." Omaloi biadmi. So the Mashal Shimon says, "Who should I send it with?" The Omaloi. So Reuben says, "Hakish lemakel v'tavoi." Hit it with a stick, and it will come. So now what happens? Is he, it has he taken responsibility thereby? Amr Rav Nachman, Amr Rav Rav, Amr Rav, Kivit Shiyotzes Mishos HaMashal, once it left the Mishos of the Mashal, Umesa, then if it dies on the way, Chayav, then the Shoyo was Chayav. Because by saying that, he's saying that I'm willing to accept responsibility on it as soon as it goes out of your Mishos. So Tosfos discusses over here, so are we talking about, I mean, doesn't there have to be Meshicha? We're going to talk about further on the Omud, that there needs to be Meshicha in order for him to, in order for him to be Chayev. So Tosfos says, so if it went out into, a stinter, into a side street or something, then you could say it's considered as though he did Meshicha on it, because he said, you hit it with a stick, and I'll consider that as though it was Meshicha. But if it went out to Rosh Hashanah, maybe that wouldn't work. So Tosfos discusses a couple of possibilities why Rav doesn't mention that point. And Tosfos, a couple of possibilities, maybe because your typical chotzer doesn't go out directly into Rosh Hashanah. But then Tosfos says that actually maybe even if it goes out in Rosh Hashanah directly, then already he'd be chayiv and oinsin. Maybe the meshicha of hitting it with a stick is enough to be koneh already for that purpose. Okay. So Rav is saying again that when he said Hakisha B'makal V'hitovoi, then already he's chayiv in what happens to it, including the oinsin, as soon as the guy does that and leaves his rishus. Well, the Gemara says name a Messiah lay. Can we say that the following brisa supports him? Ashileni paroscha. Reuven says, "Lend me your cow." V'omalei biyadmi. And Shimon says, "Who should I send it with?" V'omalei Hakisha B'makal V'hitovoi. And he says, "Hit it with a stick, and it'll come to me." Then, as soon as it leaves the marshal's reshus and it dies and it's chayev, which sounds like exactly what Rav is saying. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi says, no, not necessarily. Because this last braisa that we just quoted could be talking about the case could be that the shoyel and the mashal have adjacent chatzeres, and the shoyel's chotzer, to get in and out of his chotzer, he has to pass through the mashal's chotzer. So Reuven, who wants to borrow it, lives further in, away from the street. Shimon lives in a chotzer closer to the street, and in order for Reuven to get out, to get in and out, he has to go through, he has the reshus to go through, he has an easement through Shimon's chotzer to go back and forth. So now when Shimon sends the animal to him, vadeh lahosam ozla, then necessarily, definitely, it's going to go there. So it's not going to go out into Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, you can say that the shoyel is willing to accept that reshus. So now the shoyel, in other words, assumes. Now what's going to happen? Yes, the animal, of course, could walk out to Rosh Hashanah. But obviously, when he says Hakisha B'makol V'hitovoi, the owner of the animal, the Shimon who lives in the outside chotzer, is going to, if the animal starts going in the direction of the Rosh Hashanah, Shimon will just stand there and prevent it from going and block it from going in that direction. And where else is it going to go? It's going to wind up walking into Reuven's chotzer. So therefore, maybe Reuven then has a smichus das that assumes that it's going to end up in his chotzer, and therefore is willing to accept the shibud and the responsibility on himself. But if, let's say, we're talking about that they live on different sides of the Shasarabim, not necessarily, even if the Rav Ashi is saying that no, even if he told him, Akishu Makal, he told him, he's not willing necessarily to accept responsibility, Ad Kedei Kach, that it's going to know to cross the Shasarabim and come to him rather than get lost on the way or something like that. So therefore, so this Braisa is not necessarily supporting, so Rav, in other words, would be saying that it would apply even, that it would work even in that case, even where it's a false Rosh Hashanah, but the Braisa is not necessarily talking about that. Well, the Gemara asks, Yehochi, my memra. Well, then what's the Chiddush? Of course, if he tells him, Akishu B'makal, V'hitovoy, and the only other place where it can go is to his Chotzer, he's going to be Chai. And the answer is, Loit Tzricha, the Chiddush is the Ikka Gazyosa. Suppose that in the Chotzer, of the mashal, the outer chotzer, there are various corners and things where instead of the, now you have like this. Before we talked about there's only two possible ways for the animal to go. It could go out to Shasarabim, and Ruvain the Shoyo can expect that Shimon will block the animal from doing that, because obviously he doesn't want his animal to wander out in Shasarabim. And the other possibility is it goes into Ruvain's chotzer. Now we're saying that the chotzer of the mashal may have in it different corners and different areas where the animal can run into those. So you might think then in that case the shoyl is not necessarily mentally guaranteed that the animal is going to go to him because after all it might go into one of those corners and it won't come straight to him, and why should he be there for chayiv? Therefore the braisa is saying that nevertheless he is soymach das and he is willing to take responsibility, even though, yes, conceivably it might run into one of those corners, but more likely it's going to go to my chotzer, and then in that case I will have a chrayus for it. So even now, as soon as I'm telling you Akishu B'makal, then I'm going to assume it's going to most likely come to my chotzer, and therefore I'm willing to accept responsibility for it. Rashi mentions that the word gazyosa, how does gazyosa come to mean corners? Rashi explains it means basically it comes from a word that means pulling away or schlepping. So here it's like places where the animal can pull itself away into like side areas or whatever. Anyway, that's the point of Rashi. The Ritva says that, look, I mean, so what is it? Is it still in the chotzer of the mashal, or is it in the chotzer of the shoyl? If it's in the chotzer of the mashal, why should it be chayev bachu? So it's not yet in his chotzer, and if it's in the shoyl's chotzer, then of course it's chayev. So the Ritva explains that we're talking about that these corners and alleyways and whatnot are between the two chatzeres. So it's not a Rosh Hashanah, but there are other people's rishus. So even though the animal might go in there, nevertheless the shoyl is chayev bachru, so it's not an actual Rosh Hashanah. Anyway, the point is that the braisa can be talking about that. That doesn't necessarily bear out Rav's point that even if he tells that he always, when he tells Makisha Lamakal V'itovu, even when it's across Rosh Hashanah, that it should work, not necessarily. So here's where, again, are Rav and Shmuel necessarily arguing? So Tosfos had said that yes, they are arguing, and the halacha would end up being like Shmuel. The Rosh argues and says that no, not necessarily are Rav and Shmuel arguing. In fact, if he told him Akisha B'makal V'itovay, then he would be chayav bachru. You'll say he just didn't want to explain the Mishnah that way, because the Mishnah mentions an Eved. So according to the Rosh, the halacha may well be like Rav, that once he tells him Akishu B'makal V'itovay, then that's enough for him to be chayav bachru yosef. So in the end, it does wind up being a machlok saposkim on that, whether in fact it's necessary for mashicha, whether in fact he needs to do mashicha in order to be chayav or not, or is it enough that he says Akishu B'makal. So the Gemara says, okay, well now let's talk about this point. At what point does the She'ela take effect such that the Mashal can't take it back anymore? If I say, for example, I'm going to lend you such and such, then up till a certain point, I would have the right to say, you know what, actually, I realize I can't lend it to you after all, and nothing happens. But then there can be a point, there has to come a point, when you borrowed it, and I don't have the right to unilaterally say, you know what, I need it back. Obviously, if you want to be a nice guy and get it back, then good. But there has to come a point when I don't have the ability to do that. What is that point? So the Gemara says, Amar Abuna, Hashoyo Kaudim Machaveh, a person borrows an axe from somebody else, Ubika boy, Boka boy, if he used it to split wood, if he started already using it, no, then he was koinet as far as, so then he was koinet as far as Oinsin, and as far as that the Sha'ila can't be undone, and so forth, like Boka boy, like Knoi, but if he didn't actually split wood with it yet, then he wasn't koinet, and then the other, and then the other one would, so in other words, Rashi explains that, Rav Huna is saying that when it comes to Shomrim, just doing Meshichan is not enough. So even though he did Meshicha on the axe and brought it into his Rishus, that wouldn't be enough for him to, that wouldn't be enough for it to be an irrevocable Sheila, and he wouldn't, well, that's the Gemara has to figure out, Lamai. As far as what point is Rav Huna saying that the key thing is when he actually starts using it? Ilema la Oinsin, do we mean that he's chayiv in Oinsin only once he started using it? Maishna Pora, the Meshas Sheila. Well, then we have to ask, why is it different by a cow? Where we're saying in the Mishnah that as soon as he borrows it, and even tells him, for example, whether it's Hakisha B'mako, whether he tells him to send it with Pliny, whatever, we said as soon as it leaves the Marshal's Rishus in one of these ways, then the Shoyo becomes higher for it. Why, in the case of an axe over here, would Rav Huna be saying that only when he actually starts using it, only then does he become Chayav B'Oinsin? So, Elal Hazara. So you're right. As far as Oinsin, he's going to be Chayav from when he did Mashiach. So indeed, from when he did Mashiach, he's going to be Chayav in Oinsin. Tosfos is going to discuss further on that whether that applies to all Shomrim. But what we're talking about over here is, Elul Chazara. But we're talking about over here that, so we're talking about over here as far as retracting. So if Reuven says, lend me your axe for X amount of time, and now during that time, the marshal says, you know what, I need it back. I demand it back. So then it depends. If the shoyel already split the wood with it, then already he was koine to the extent where now the other guy can't retract from it unilaterally. And therefore the marshal can't demand it back. He can ask for it back, and if the guy wants to give it back, then good. But he's not obligated to, because at this point, by starting to split wood with it, Rav Huna is saying that already he was cutting it to that extent that now the other guy can't retract.
That's an interesting halacha, because
the halacha is not necessarily like Rav Huna in that,
I'm waiting.
The Ritzvah and Tzatha would be a reason of Tikkun HaOlam. You don't want that a person is going to lend somebody else, and then the next day, and then the next day, the guy is going to say, you know what, give it to me, I demand it back. So that's as far as Chazara we're talking about. So Loi Boka Boy, if you didn't actually start splitting wood with it, Moti Mashal Hodrebe, then the Mashal is able to change his mind and say that I want it back. In other words, again, the point is that the Meshicha helps as far as him being chayiv and oinsin with it, just like it does in the cow with our, just like it does with the cow of our Mishnah, but not as far as that it should be an irrevocable sheva. And the Ritzvah points out a reason behind it. We learned earlier in the Masechta that Bechlal, how does Meshicha come to work on the Talmud anyway? We had the Shlokish held some in our Torah, but Rabbi Yechanan holds, and the Halacha is like Rabbi Yechanan, that's only Medrabana. Well then, Rav Huna holds that concept was only established when it comes to buying, not when it comes to borrowing.
So you don't have Mashiach for borrowing.
So not so much you have Mashiach for borrowing insofar as being chayav ba'onsin, but not as far as that the other guy can't retract. Using it is when it makes it irrevocable. Right. We do have the machlokas we've shown him that we mentioned before, whether when we say, for example, he says, send it with your son or your eved or whatever, or when he says, Hakisha B'mako, on what grounds is he chayav yet? Is it that we're saying that it's a matter of orev, basically? He's saying that based on my words, you're going to do such and such. Therefore, that means I'm accepting responsibility, because I understand once you're letting it out of your rishus, somebody has to be responsible for it, and I'm taking that responsibility. Or is it based on the idea that he actually becomes a shoyal at that point, even without the mashicha, that's a report. Now, the Gemara points out that Rav Huna is disagreeing with Rav Ami on that regard. Rav Ami says that suppose a person were to lend an axe of hektish to somebody else. Ma lefitovas hanar shabbat. So now, the one who had the axe in his possession, he's committed me'ilah, and he's going to have to pay the keren, but he's not paying the entire amount. He's not paying the entire amount because, after all, he didn't sell it to the other guy. If he had sold it, then he'd be chayev for the entire value of it. But he's going to have to pay lefitovas hanar shabbat the amount that he would be willing to pay. That the shoyel should consider that I did him a favor. So in other words, so that would be the amount. So that would be the amount that he'd pay Hector. So
for what did he do? Again?
So he's saying, in other words, that so Reuven had an axe which he had previously given to Hector. Now it's still in his possession. Hector hasn't picked it up. Now Reuven forgets that it belongs to Hector, because throughout Shas, when we talk about Me'ilah, we're generally talking about B'shoigig, and he lends it out to Shimon. So now we're saying that Reuven has now committed Me'ilah, but not to the extent where he'd have to pay Hekdesh the full value of the axe, because after all, the axe is going to be coming back to him. So rather, he pays only according to Tovas Hanah. We figure out how much would he be willing to pay that a person, how much would a person be willing to pay that the other guy should owe him a favor, basically.
Someone does do Me'ilah B'mezid. Can he?
Me'ilah B'mezid. What? No.
Was the one? Shivcha Harufa.
Shivcha Harufa is B'mezid. Yeah. Of the various Hashamas, yeah. Hashem Zelus is where he swore falsely on it.
But not Me'ilah B'mezid.
Me'ilah B'mezid is now. Yeah. So Hashem Zelus is only B'shoyeg. Yeah. The pasuk actually says B'chot B'shgoga Mikod She'ashem. The ones with
Me'ilah where you can make a shliach.
Yeah, that's just one of the rare exceptions where we don't say shlof or shalom. Come on, say, yeah.
Let's
try to keep on talking.
Then I'm not guilty. The shliach is?
Right.
Or?
No. No, the other way around. Then if the shliach did exactly what you said, then you're the one who's guilty.
I'm the one who's not the shliach.
But let's focus on it here. Okay.
I knew there was something special.
Yeah. So anyway, the point is that Reuven so far is chayev from Me'ilah, and Ami continues, now Shimon, at this point, is already allowed to use the axe, even the Hatchila, because even if he finds out after that he got it that belongs to Hekdesh, because once Reuven became chayev in Me'ilah, and becomes chayev to pay Hekdesh, at that point, that Hanah from it, it becomes Cholin. We have a general rule that once Me'ilah has been done, and the thing therefore leaves the Rishus of Hekdesh, now that's it. Like, once Me'ilah is done, it leaves the Rishus of Hekdesh, and therefore it doesn't belong to Hekdesh anymore. Therefore, now Shimon would be allowed to use that axe, and it's not considered that he's committing Me'ilah, because it's already, the Me'ilah has already been committed. So that's what Rav Ami says. Now, the Eloi Knoi, now, if you're going to say, like Rav Huna, that he's not koine it until he actually starts using it, amai mal, then why would Reuven be committing Me'ilah only by handing it over to Shimon? And why would Shimon be allowed to use that axe, even l'chatchila? Nihadre, we would have to say, according to Rav Huna, he should return it, and he wouldn't have been koine it in the first place, because he didn't start splitting wood with it yet, and therefore nobody would have committed Me'ilah. The fact that it's not so, the fact that Rav Ami says that in fact Me'ilah has been committed by giving it over to him, that implies that Rav Ami does not agree with Rav Huna. Tosfos discusses over here what is the nature of this axe, what type of kli is it, for example? Is it a kli shoris that's actually used for shechting? For Tosfos says that no, not really. And furthermore, also Tosfos deals with when we say that he's moral if he tovas hanar shabbai, but why is it then? Why would the other guy be able to use the axe? After all, the entire value of the axe has not yet gone out of Hekdesh. But nevertheless, it's true the entire axe leaves the rishus of Hekdesh, but nevertheless, the Me'ilah is only, as the Gemara is saying, if he tovas hanar shabbai, that's how it is. And Tosfos says maybe not, actually. Maybe the axe itself remains in the possession of a Hekdesh, only the Tovas Hanah would be. So all that would be is when we say Mutal Bakeya Boy, it just means during the time that they agreed that he's borrowing it. So we had said that he's borrowing it, and he's gonna borrow it, let's say, for 30 days. So during those 30 days, he'd be allowed to use it. After that 30 days, we would say if he continues using it at that point, then he's Moyal Behed. Then Shimon, the one who borrowed it, is going to be Moyal Behed, which Tosfos discusses. Anyway, so we see that Rav Huna then disagrees with that. And the Gemara continues also, Pligas at Abelazar. Furthermore, we also see that Rav Huna is disagreeing with Rav Elazar. The Amar Rav Elazar, Kederach Shetikna Meshicha B'Lakochas, Rav Elazar says, no, exactly the same way as Meshicha works as far as a buyer, where once Meshicha is done, neither of them can renege from it. Kach Tikna Meshicha B'Shoimrim, the same way when it comes to Shoimrim, when they do Meshicha on the thing, then already they're completely koinet, and therefore the owner cannot retract. Meanwhile, according to Rav Huna, we're saying you could still retract until the other guy uses it. Now Tosfos says actually that when we say kach tikna meshicha b'shoimrim, we don't actually mean as far as being chayiv and oinsin. Tosfos says because we learned earlier, you can have by shemachinam, you don't even need to do meshicha. You can have, where he says hanach lafanai, he says put it down in front of me. Lafanai, not lafanecha, not we just says when we just says hanach, then we had a machlokus in the Gemara, what would be the din there? But anyway, when he says hanach lafanai, then he becomes a shevachinam. Tosfos points out, even though there was no meshicha, and the same thing would be true. The same thing would be true as far as the shemasachar.
Well,
so rather,
which was
because once he says hanach lafanai, then he's saying, in other words, that I'm willing to accept that raya swear. So, so that's what Tosfos is saying. When we say, when Rav Elazar is saying over here, and the halacha is like him, so Tosfos says, no, as far as oinsin, you don't even need meshicha for that purpose. Even without meshicha, he can be chayiv in oinsin. We're still talking about over here, as far as chazara, whether once he did meshicha, then the owner can't say that you know what, I want it back, and I want you to, and you need to give it back. Now, Agoras Agura points out that the Rambam disagrees, and the Rambam would say that Meshicha is needed even in order to be Chayiv and Oinsin. So when he says Hanach Lafana is a special case, but other than that, basically we would say that you need Meshicha. So the Gemara says Tanya Nami Hochi. In fact, we learn a Braisa like what Rav Elazar says. Well, Braisa says exactly that. Kishem Shetiknu Meshicha B'Lakochas Kach Tiknu Meshicha B'Shoyimim. And Ukhashem, and there's another similarity over here. Ukhashem Shekarka Nifnes Kesef Ushtar of Chazaka. The same way as you can acquire karka with any of the three ways by paying money for it, unlike Metalkal, meaning Meshicha, or some other form of Kinyan. By karka, you can, once you pay the money, then already it's yours. Or a shtar, or you write out a shtar of a chazaka, or you do a chazaka, for example, Rashi points out, no agada or para, or para to agada, you close the door, you broke through a fence, you fenced an area or whatever, then all those things are valid chazakas on karka. The same way the Braisa says schiros also, when a person is renting something, then it means that he's koine b'kesef b'shtar of a chazaka. So the last schiros mayavite, what do you mean though? Isn't the schiros accomplished by meshicha? So Gemara says Amar Rav Chista schiros karka. What we're talking about over here is when the Braisa says schiros, we mean schiros karka, for example, renting him a house. So as soon as the other guy gives him the money, or he writes out a shtar that I'm renting you the house for X amount, or he's maxic, then neither one can back out of it. So that's what it means when we say that schiros is nichnem b'kesef v'shtar of chazaka. It's true as far as schiros of metaltlin, you would still need. Rabbi Lazar had said that by there meshicha is enough. And again, according to Tosfos, that means you can be chayiv and oinsin even without meshicha. Just in order for it to be irrevocable, there needs to be meshicha. And according to the Rambam, even oinsin is not going to be chayiv unless there was meshicha or something that stands in the place of Meshicha, for example, what we said in the Mishnah, where he tells him, send it to me with my son or your Eved or what have you. Okay. The Gemara says, Omer Shmuel, Haiman begozo chavitza de tamri mechavero. We're going to be discussing now, in other words, we just discussed on Amud Aleph about differences between a hedyet and a hekdesh in terms of borrowing and in terms of things like that. So now the Gemara brings another din related to that. So Omer Shmuel, Haiman de Gozo Chavitza de Tamri Mechaveroi. If a person stole a chavitza of dates from somebody else. These are Rashi explains. Chavitza means a bunch of dates that are stuck together. You have the word chavitza is used, for example, of the process of making butter or cheese, where you have one solid mass made out of the liquid. So therefore, the word so similarly here, chavitza is a solid mass of dates stuck together. So one person steals it from the other. The isva chamishim tami, and the bundle, the stuck together thing, has 50 dates in it. Now, agav hadodi mizdaben chamishim nachichada. Now, if you sell them in bulk altogether, then it'll be worth 49. Chada chada. But if you sell them individually, mizdaben chamishim, then you would be able to sell each one for you'd sell each one for a pruta, and therefore it's worth 50 prutas. So, is it worth 50 or is it worth 49? So it depends, Shmuel says. Lehedyet mishalem chamishim nachichada. If he stole such a thing from a hedyet, then he would pay 49. Lehekdish mishalem chamishim v'chumshayu. But if it's hekdish, he's going to have to pay 50. Plus, he's going to have to pay a choymish, because by hekdish, you have to pay a choymish as well. Masha'enken memazik. Now, Shmuel also adds, this that we're saying that he would pay a choymish when he steals it is unlike when he's other kind of mazik. When he's mazik hektish, then deloy mashalom chumsha, then in fact there's no choymish to be paid. He just pays the keren. Tosfos discusses that actually midaraisa he wouldn't even be chayev for the keren necessarily, but midirabbanan he's chayev for the keren, but even then he's not chayev for the choymish because he's a mazik. And the reason is, and we know this because when the Pasuk says if a person eats Kodesh, and the Pasuk says that he has to pay a Chomesh, that means, Prat Lamazik, as opposed to when he's damaging Hekish. So we see that a Mazik is Potter, and again, according to Tosfos, he'd be Potter even from the Keren. Anyway, so again, the point is that there's a difference in this regard between a hedyet and hekdish, how much you would have to pay. We're saying that to a hedyet with this bunch of stuck together dates, since in bulk they're sold for 49, then you'd be chayiv for only 49. Well, maskif or Rabbi Barbaya, so Rabbi Barbaya asks why. Lehedyet, amay mishalom, chamishi nachi choda, why with a hedyet would he be paying only 49, name alay. Why can't the nigzal say, I'm not chod chod, I have a mezabnin alahu? You're assuming it's worth only 49 because in bulk? How do you know? I would have sold it in bulk. I could have broken them apart and sold each one individually and gotten 50. Why should you get away with paying me only 49? So the answer is, Amar Avuna, Bered de Rishua, Shomin de Saba Oisa Sodets, man. Because we have to go back to something that we learned in Baba Kama. We had a case there where an animal goes into somebody else's field and eats some of the produce over there. So we said, how do we figure out? We take a base saw in that field. We see how much it was worth before the animal started eating over there, how much it's worth now. So we don't just figure, Rashi points out, and we learned this in Baba Kama in some detail. We don't just figure out how much the amount was itself that he ate, because after all, it was produce that was not completely ripe. For example, you never know; it might not have ended up ripening, or there are various other considerations as well. And anyway, we learn from the pasuk that this is how it is. So therefore, what we do is we figure out. Suppose that he wanted to sell this base saw that includes this area with all the plants in it. How much would he have been able to sell it for before the animal came in, versus how much less is he able to sell it for now because this particular area was eaten? So now the fact is if somebody else is going to buy it, he's going to ask for a discount. Fine, but it's not going to be so much of a discount. So therefore, it becomes a kula on the nizik. On the mazik, rather. And we learned it from Pesukim over there. We learned from Baba Kama from Pesukim. That was according to Rashi, Tosfos over here, and in Baba Kama discusses. Now that's not necessarily what it means. It doesn't mean that you go. Doesn't mean that you figure out within that base saw itself that you figure out how much less it's worth as a result of the animal eating. But rather, it means, in other words, that we figure out. We're not talking about an area. Usually, a base saw would mean an area where you can plant a saw. That would be an enormous amount for an animal to eat. It's not likely that it ate that much. Rather, we mean an area where saw grows. So we're talking about that and that we figure out, we find an area, we find the area where the animal ate, and let's say ate a saw, and then we figure out, how much would it be worth among 60 such areas. Whatever the case, the point is, in other words, that, so we see the Torah is makel on the mazik to pay less, the same way then, so the same way Shmuel is saying that now when it comes to this matter of the dates, the same thing will make on him, and he gets to pay the lower price of 49 rather than 50. Well, the Gemara asks, remember, Savar Shmuel din hedyet lav kedin gavoya? Are you telling me then that Shmuel holds that the din of a hedyet as far as gneva and gzela would be the same, would be different than it is with hekdesh? Because that's what we're saying, that when it comes to, when he steals it from the hedyet, he's paying 50, but when he's at the retail price, but when he steals it from hekdesh, he's paying only the wholesale price. We learn in a Mishnah in Me'ilah, not al even a koda mehekdesh. If a person, and the Gemara explains there that it's actually talking about the gizbar himself, who has the stones of hekdesh in his possession. So if he takes even a koda, if he takes a stone or a beam mehekdesh and gives it to somebody else, loy mal. So just by taking it, he's not committing the ila yet because he's the gizbar, and anyway it's in his rishus. So by him taking it from point A to point B is not necessarily, he hadn't taken it out of the rishus of hekdesh. Had he been a hedyet, then already commit mila at that point. But because he himself is a gizbar, then no. Not the lachavere, but if he gives it to somebody else, kumal, then he's committed meila because that's how it works. Because now he took it out of the rishus of hekdesh. Lachavere leimal, the friend has not committed meila because he already received it, and meila had already been committed by the time he did it. But continues the mission rather. Bna b'seich b'seich. If the gizbar takes the stone and builds it into his house, loy mal, he has not yet committed me'ila. Ad shiyadu tachter b'shava pruta, unless he lives underneath it, and the amount of time he lives there is the value of a pruta. Because in general, for hekdesh, you need the value of a pruta in order to be chayav, with certain exceptions, which eventually, when we learn masechta me'ila, we'll learn about them. That's the shem. Anyway, the Rashi brings from the Gemara and Chagiga that discusses this, that we're talking from the Gemara and Chagiga and in Me'ila that talks about that we're saying he didn't actually, if he had built the stone into his house, he'd be Chayav Me'ila at that point because he already changed it. We're talking about, let's say, he put it on top of a skylight to block the rain or whatever from coming in. So therefore, he hasn't made any shinui in it. So only when he actually uses it to the value of a pruta would he be Chayav. Anyway, now the Yosef Rav Abahu Kamed Rav Yechanan. Now, How does this bear on what Shmuel is saying? Because Rabbi Bohu was sitting one time as a Talmud in front of Rabbi Yechanan, the Yosef HaKalim Mishmeid Shmuel, he was sitting and saying, in the name of Shmuel, Zois Omeres, we see from this Mishnah, that you can learn from it the din, which we also learned in Bava Kama, Hadur B'Hatzar Chaveira, Shalei Midaitoi, if one person lives in somebody else's chotzer without his knowledge, Sorech L'Halos V'Schar, then he has to pay him rent. Even when it's a place where it's not normally rented out, and even when the shoyl is not usually somebody who has to, or even when the tenant is not usually somebody who has to pay rental, or doesn't have to pay rent for a place because he has a place of his own, nevertheless, Shmuel was saying that he would still be obligated to pay rent. And we can derive that from our mission over here because we're saying the same way as when this gizbar took the stone from hekdesh and put it on his skylight, and nevertheless we're still saying that he's chayav from me'ila. So we see from that that Shmuel is equating hekdesh and hedyet the same way as by hekdesh he's chayav from me'ila just by putting it on there and living underneath it for a shava pruta, because now there's a pruta that he owes hekdesh and he hasn't given it, and therefore he's committed me'ila. And the same way then it would work by hedyet as well. So we see that with Shmuel holds that hekdesh and hedyet are the same for this purpose. So what are you telling me by the case of the ganav before that there's a difference? And the answer is Amalei Rav Yechanan. So Rav Yechanan answers Rav Abahu, and this is in parenthesis because in fact some of the Mefarshim, some of the Achronim take that out. Hagoyis Hagra has it in parenthesis also, meaning that takes it out. On the other hand, Hagoyis HaBach does have it, and has slightly differently. Or Omole Rabbi Yochanan, that you should know the answer is it's not a question on Shmuel. In any case, Hodabei Shmuel Me'ahi, Shmuel changed his mind on that and said that actually the person is not chayav to pay rent. So there is a difference between hektik and hedyot after all. So again, if we have the parenthesis over here, then it doesn't really fit because the question was, why would we have a question then? If we know that Rav Abahu had this conversation with Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yochanan said, Hodabei Shmuel Me'ahi, then there'd be no reason to ask the question in the first place. So rather than if we take it out, then it means the stomach of the Gemara is telling us you should know Shmuel changed his mind. If you have like a Goy Sabah, that the Gemara is saying, but don't you realize you're asking what Rav Abahu said based on what Shmuel says, but don't you realize that Rabbi Yochanan told him that Shmuel changed his mind? Well, the Gemara asks, fine, you're saying that Shmuel changed his mind on something. How do you know that he changed his mind and said that there is, after all, a difference between Hedyot and Hekdish? By Hekdish,
so, Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel interacted.
So they sent letters to one another. The Gemara tells us in Cholin that Rabbi Yochanan one time was considering going to visit Shmuel once he found out what a God of Israel Shmuel was, but in the end, he did, for reasons that the Gemara tells us over there. So no, but Pashtos, they never met in life. I mean, the truth is, we learned previously, and we learned in the Agadta in the seventh paragraph, we learned that Shmuel was for a period of time Debbie's doctor. Conceivably, I guess he and Rabbi Yochanan might have met then, but Rabbi Yochanan himself was only one of the junior Talmidim of Debbie. So if they met then, it certainly wouldn't have been as mature Talmid Chacham. Anyway, yeah. So when we say, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, what we mean, he said to Rabbi Bo. Anyway, so the question is, okay, so we have like this, we have a statement of Shmuel that Hektish and Hedyot are different in that we're saying the matter of the dates. On the other hand, we have a statement of Shmuel saying that they're the same, namely that just like you owe Hektish the Pruta for living under the stone in your house, the same way you chayev to pay rent for the other guy. Now, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, or summoned to Gemara, is saying that Shmuel changed his mind on that second din. How do you know? How do we know he changed his mind on that one? Maybe he changed his mind on the original din about the dates. And the answer is loy me'ahi hodabe. No, necessarily Shmuel must have changed his mind on the second din about the rental kidderava. And the reason is based on what Rava says. Now Shmuel was long before Rava, but it means, in other words, the concept of later on Rava
expressed. Like, yeah.
So to Amar Rava, hektish loy midas kehediyat midas dum. When a person uses hektish without hektish knowing about it, is the equivalent of using something that belongs to a hedyot with his das. Because hektish is available for everybody. Nobody's going to be able to be moicha because you have something of hektish in your possession. It's not necessarily, nobody knows that it's hektish and therefore there's nobody to protest and preventing. And Hashem is the one who says you're not allowed to. That if you do, you're committing me'ilah. On the other hand, with a hedyot, he knows that this thing belongs to him. So if he does it with the das of the owner, then he'd be chayav to pay. Now, that doesn't necessarily prove where the hedyot does not know about it, namely, adur v'chatzach avir, shaloi midaitoi. So he may well be potter. So it comes out that that would explain why Shmuel changed his mind, because yes, just because living under the stone of Hektish makes him chayev, that's different, because by Hektish, we say Shaloi Midas is chayev. It doesn't necessarily follow that. The same thing should be by a hedyot without his das, where in fact he would be potter, because Adar v'chatzach aver Shaloi Midaitoi ain't it sorich, he doesn't have to pay him rent, because then and of Zalik Hasir. So it's not the same thing. So therefore Shmuel can well say that there is a difference after all between Hedyot and Hektish. Well then, in that case, by the Chavitza of the Tamri, where there's no reason for him to retract, then he says that there is in fact a difference between them, and we're talking about the wholesale versus the retail price. An interesting thing, by the way, that comes out of this that Achronim talk about is you can have a case, for example, where someone stole or damaged part of a set of something. For a classic case they talk about, for example, the person has, let's say, a set of chumashim, and one person was mazik one of them. Now, you may not be able to buy that individual chumash by itself. You have to buy a set. So is he in fact chayev to pay according to the value of the whole set or individually? Actually, that's really more relevant to the next piece Gemara over here. So let's learn the next piece. Omar Rava, Hanish Kuloi, when you have porters who are carrying a barrel of wine from one place to another, the tavu chavisa the chamne lachanva, they broke a barrel of wine that belongs to a storekeeper. And we learned at the end of the sixth parak, there are cases where they're chayav. We said there were, where they were pesheya, or we said where, for example, there can be a case where they're carrying it with some kind of thing, which is too heavy for one person and not heavy enough for two people. We talked about over there where they used a digla, a trevois, whatever, all kinds of cases like that. So there are cases where they're chayav. Now we have to consider the value of this wine fluctuates at different times. The yom deshukam is davne behay. If the storekeeper were to sell that barrel of wine on the market day, then he'd be able to get 5 cents for it. Or the shau yomi. The other day is misdavne ba'arba. Then it sells for only 4. So now, what do we go according to when what do they pay? Do they pay 4 or 5? So I had really be yom deshukam. So if they return him, if they pay him the nezek on the next yom hashuk, mahadule chavisa dechamra, then they can give him a barrel of wine, even though when they're giving him the barrel, it's worth only 4. So the yom hashuk, Rashi says before the yom hashuk. So in other words, he has it available to sell it. Comes the next yom hashuk. So right now they're giving him a barrel which is worth only 4. Then that would be fine because when it comes the yom hashuk, he'll be able to sell it for 5, and that will make up for the entire thing. But if they give it back to him on other days after market day is over, then they would have to return him 5 because he can tell them if I had had it on that day, I would have been able to sell it to 5. I would have been able to sell it for 5. So Rashi learns that we're talking about that they gave it to him before the market day versus after it. Tosfos says that actually maybe not. It can mean before the first market day is over. So then, in other words, he can't say, no, I only want money. No, they can say, we'll give you a barrel of wine and you can go ahead and sell it. But once the Yom HaShuk is over, then they can't return him wine. They have to return him money because he can say, I would have been able to sell it on that Yom HaShuk. Why should I have to wait for the next Yom HaShuk? But the Gemara continues, now that would only apply if he had no other wine to sell. So now he has a real loss of 5 because of them, because he would have had a barrel of wine that he could have sold for 5, and now he had no wine to sell at all. But if he had other wine to sell, did he sell his other wine? If he had wine to sell and he didn't, then it shows that he wouldn't have sold it anyway. So now they're not obligated to pay him 5 because he can't say, I would have sold it. What do you mean? If you would have sold it, you would have sold your other wine as well. Then he should have sold his other wine. And if he didn't, then it shows that he wasn't planning to sell it, and therefore we can value it at 4. So here again, this is more relevant as far as this din, all of these dinim over here are relevant as far as this business about when you have part of a set, how much are you paid, how much are you responsible for, because you don't usually buy and sell these things individually, only as a set, so therefore you can talk about the hezek as the entire set. And Rava says, now there are actually, Hagoyes HaGrah points out over here, there are a lot of different explanations over here of what exactly, Rashi is saying over here that they can return him a barrel of wine versus returning him money, and that it depends whether it's before the Yom HaShuk or on the Yom HaShuk. So you have different explanations over here. You have the Rosh and the Raivad give an explanation that we're talking about not when they're paying, but when they broke it. On the day they broke it was a Yom HaShuk, then it's worth 5. So then, nevertheless, they can pay with another barrel of wine, because on that day, that barrel is worth 5. But if they pay on the other days, then they would pay 4, because if they broke it, rather, the Raivad and the Rosh Lurn that we're talking about, then we're saying if they broke it on other days, then it's worth only 4, and we're saying that when it was a Yom HaShuk, and he had no other wine to sell, and now he would have been able to sell this one for 5, if right now, even outside the Yom HaShuk, he's able to sell, then he could say, you know what, the fact is I could have sold it for 5 any time, and now I can't. And therefore, it's adapted the opposite. When it's not the Yom, when they broke it, not on a Yom HaShuk, and he has other wine to sell, then they would in fact be having to pay him 5. And then you have yet another explanation, the Rif and the Rambam, understand that it means that it's a, that either way they can pay back with a barrel, but if they're going to pay back with money, then they need to pay, according to how much worth it's be on the day when they're paying back. Five on the Yom HaShoah, four on the other days. So there are quite a few possibilities among Rishonim, and Agros Agra mentions them briefly in his notes over here on the Gemara and on Rashi and on Tosfos over here. So we're saying that now there are cases where they're going to have to pay five. However, we have to consider when you say that a barrel is worth five, you have to consider you have the storekeeper's expenses on the other hand. Now, on the other hand, so here, he could have sold this barrel of wine. On the other hand, if he did, there would have been certain expenses that he had to incur in the course of selling it. Those have to be deducted from what they're paying. Therefore, menakile agar tufe. First of all, they deduct from it the amount of his tircha. He would have been sitting there and selling it a cup full or a bottle full at a time. So instead, he could have sold it all at once. So we have to consider the difference between that, the difference of kapoil bottle, Rashi says. How much would he be willing to accept that instead of having to sit there and sell it piecemeal to be able to sell it all at once, how much of a discount would he be willing to take for that? And therefore, we deduct it from that. And also, with made Barzan Yosa, we also have to deduct the amount that he would have had to pay somebody to make a hole in it for the faucet, to get the wine out. Of course, it's something an expert. The barrels were made out of earthenware, and they could easily break when you're drilling a hole in them. You need an expert to do that. So he would have had to pay an expert to drill that hole. So now, instead, he needs to deduct that now in the...
These barrels are earthenware.
In those times, all barrels were earthenware, yeah.
You're kidding. I'm thinking barrels.
No, by the times that they're shown in barrels were made out of wood, which is why in many places that they're shown in. Take the trouble to mention. Rashi mentions over here, for example, Meshu Hushal Cheres, because it's made out of earthenware. They had to point that out because by Rashi's times, barrels were generally made out of wood, and therefore why would you have to make a hole in it? So, and why would it be that hard to make a hole in it? You just drill like in any other wood. But here we're talking about it's made out of cheres. So the fact is, though, these guys broke the barrel. Now, instead, they're paying them back with a barrel. So therefore, they're paying them back with a barrel of wine, with the value of a barrel of wine. But the fact is, now he doesn't have to have somebody make that hole. There is a different girsa. Rashi mentions that there's also... One second. Rashi has another girsa, not Barzan Yosa, Moloshin Beres, which means a faucet, but rather Karzan Yosa, Moloshin Cruz, which means the advertising, to sell his wine. He would have to advertise that people should know, to come to his store, to buy it, whether wholesale or whether retail, so he would have had to pay somebody to advertise that, and instead he fashvored himself that, because again, the barrel is broken, and they're replacing it with another barrel, or they're replacing it with the money, as the case may be. So if they're paying him back money, we have to deduct that, because after all, he doesn't have that expense, because now instead he has the cash without having to go through that. So the point is, in other words, we see there are things that are worth different things in different times, the same way as we said about the chavitza de chamri, you have where wholesale they're worth one price, and retail they're worth a different one, so it is you have by this wine as well, and therefore you have different dinim in that regard.
Just one question for you.
Yeah.
When you said Rav Bibi, did you say Rav Bibi or Rav Bibi?
Rav Bibi, I said, that's true, the Shalach just points out.
See, I remember.